A group of Marquette University law students and community members conducted a series of restorative justice exercises recently with incarcerated men at the Racine Correctional Institution. That was earlier in the fall. These restorative justice circles brought the participants together to promote understanding and healing between people who have been harmed and people who have caused that harm. It's an alternative or a supplement to more punitive approaches to justice. And these types of restorative practices are also being used in places like schools to promote better participation and mental health among students. Our next guest is a former judge who's leading this effort from Marquette University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have any experience with restorative justice? Do you like the idea of restorative justice practices? What questions do you have about what it is and how it works? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mary Trajano is an adjunct professor of law and director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice at Marquette University. She is a former chief judge for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. Mary, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob. Much appreciated.
Restorative justice has gotten a fair amount of attention recently, but for those who aren't familiar, can you give us the basics of the concept?
Absolutely. So restorative justice really is a unique way of approaching harm from crime or wrongdoing. The easiest way to sort of discern it is to compare it to the traditional system of justice. And the traditional system is focused on retribution or punishment, but restorative justice focuses on righting the wrong and moving towards healing. What it invites us to do is it helps us to try to hold people who harm directly accountable for its repair, but it also, and a very important, gives survivors a voice so that they can begin to recover and hopefully heal. So restorative justice is really a framework in appropriate instances that can hopefully accomplish both of those.
Now, what caught our eye and had us give you a call this time around was this thing you did at the Racine Correctional Institution with people who are currently incarcerated. Can you talk us through what actually happened?
Sure, absolutely. And I'm excited because it's my first attempt to facilitate circles on my own. So I'd like to start with the fact that Marquette University Law School is not unfamiliar with restorative justice. Mm-hmm. Former Justice Jeanine Geske ran the Restorative Justice Initiative for probably 20 years at Marquette University Law School. And she started out with hosting restorative justice circles at Green Bay Correctional and had been doing that for about 20 years. And back when I was a baby judge, just starting out, I was invited by Justice Geske to participate in a circle. And that participation really transformed my view of restorative justice and how we can move people towards healing. So 20 years later, I'm now in a position to facilitate restorative justice circles at Racine Correctional, not Green Bay. And our first restorative justice circle was in early November. So restorative justice circles are really a structured process based upon and rooted in indigenous practices. We take a lot of our practices when we do circles from our Native American friends, who used circles to connect humans together, to have people heal from wrongs. And so it's not a new practice, but it's certainly a positive one. So Rob, what we did was I invited community members and law students who I teach in my clinical program to Racine, and Racine Correctional invited about 18 incarcerated men. And for 3 days, we community build, get to know each other, try to understand each other's backgrounds and histories and why we're there. I also have three what we call surrogate victims, not victims of the men who are in circle, but victims of crime and wrongdoing who tell their story over pretty much a full day during the circle process. One was a victim of a gunshot wound from a youth who had shot him trying to steal his car. Another was a victim of sexual assault pretty egregious sexual assault, actually twice in her life. And then the third lost her child to a drunk driver. And they tell their stories in such an incredibly passionate way and share their grief and pain, but also share their joy of how they came to heal. And the men and community get an opportunity to listen to their voices. And as I say, in most circles, empathy after they tell their stories is pretty palpable. And that's what we wish for. We want people to understand the ripple effect of harm and crime so that they can empathize with the other, build community, and hopefully move towards healing. And that's what we did.
We're talking about restorative justice with Mary Trigiano with Marquette University's Center, Andrew Center for Restorative Justice, former chief judge from the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have questions about restorative justice, if you've participated in it at some level, join in at 800-642-1234. Mary, I want to talk about the people who have been victimized by crime and were willing to do this. I think no one would blame them if they said, no thanks, I don't want to relive this. I don't want to be talking to people who might have perpetrated similar crimes. Can you talk about why they got involved in this?
Yes, absolutely. So I always say restorative justice is not for everyone, and a survivor needs to be willing to want to share their story. And two of our storytellers, our survivors, have been doing this for many years. In fact, they did it with Justice Geske when she first started doing circles back 20 years ago. And they say that telling their story is very healing for them. It gives them an opportunity to explain, you know, what happened to them or to their loved one. And share with the individuals, the community members, and those who have harmed in much greater detail than you'd ever get to do in the traditional system of justice. One of the survivors says, I've saved countless dollars of therapy doing it this way because I want to bring attention to men who are incarcerated, the significant impact of crime and harm that occurred so that they understand and can empathize with those that they have harmed.
What is the benefit or the hoped for benefit now when that incarcerated person who's been convicted of a crime goes through something like this? What are the hopes that they get out of this down the road?
Yeah, I think when you build community and trust and empathy and even let the men tell their stories of trauma and harm that they endured when they were younger, it in many ways changes you for the better. And I think the hope is that, and some of these men will get out of prison and go on hopefully to live life in the community crime-free, that they have a deeper understanding of the harms that they had committed before they were incarcerated. And then it will deter them from doing further harm or try to help and repair in ways that the community deserves to be repaired after their harm. And so we hope that their lives are changed forever. For those who likely will not be leaving incarceration for any time soon, many of them, I think, have had transformations in terms of better behavior in the institution. Several of them want to start a restorative justice ongoing program for others in the institution so that they can benefit by understanding the harms that they committed. And so there's a ripple effect in that way as well.
People might hear about this, Mary, and say, okay, this sounds nice, maybe for one person at a time. Is there any kind of data? Has this been done enough to have any kind of data on whether restorative justice affects things like recidivism or future committing of crimes?
Yeah. So restorative justice has been around for probably 30 years now. It started in the early 70s, mostly used with youth who are committing crimes, and a lot of studies have been done on that. Many of the studies suggest that there is a reduction in recidivism for those who participate in certain kinds and types of restorative justice. There's a higher satisfaction level for victims and survivors of crime who go through restorative justice processes. And then there's some deeper data and research going on right now to see if there are other benefits to the community of restorative justice. Like, for instance, does it build stronger communities? Does it, you know, help people stay out of prison so that stronger communities can be built once they return to their home?
We're talking to law professor Mary Trigiano about restorative justice and her work as director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice at Marquette University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these ideas as you're hearing them? How should they fit into our criminal justice system? Have you participated in some sort of restorative justice practice, program, one of the circles we've talked about, or training? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Mary Trigiano, former chief judge for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. She currently directs the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice at Marquette University. She's with us today to talk about restorative justice and a recent Marquette Law School project hosting restorative justice circles with incarcerated men at Racine Correctional Institution. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your reactions to this idea, maybe your own experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Ellie is with us in Brookfield. Or Elle, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
So I was just saying to the other girl that answered the phone that I was incarcerated in the Wisconsin prison system for about a year and a half. And I noticed that y'all were talking about the men's system a lot, which is great. But what about the women? Because I feel like the women get left behind a lot in these kinds of projects.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. Mary, have we had restorative justice programs at women's correctional institutions?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we certainly don't want to leave anyone behind. Justice Jeanine Geske had been working somewhat with Tachita, trying to get circles there. There are some rules, certainly, that they have at some of the prisons. But we also did and are continuing to work with Project Return to do some circle processes at the Women's Correctional Facility just north of downtown Milwaukee. And they've been doing circles of support there for women for some time now. So we hope to increase our capacity at the Andrews Center to help and support that and use students to actually go in and help facilitate circles there.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Rob joins us now in Madison. Rob, hi.
Hi. I was a participant in a program, and this is a huge subject for me. And, you know, I'll just confirm what your guest said, that the programs are not for everybody. And for instance, the people I did time with, a lot of them would just take a program to reap the benefit of, for instance, getting out early or, to use it to their own ends and not for the learning experience. So the people that I did the program with, I would say there was 12 of us, about 10 of us got through it with coming out with something. So again, I have a lot more to say on it, but I just wanted to confirm what she had said, that it is true. It is not for everybody.
Well, I want to ask Rob, since you went through restorative justice, what did you feel like you got out of it?
Oh, geez. Again, we don't have enough time for that, but I'll just say a better understanding, more empathy for the victim, because when you go through that part of the program, as far as victimization and re-victimization, you feel even smaller and more terrible than you did before. I mean, but they guide you through to get you back to, you know, not feeling so bad about what you did. So again, it was a great program that I went through, and I've taken it. I'm looking to take it a step further now that I'm out. But again, one thing at a time.
So, okay, I got to ask Rob, what would the next step be? Sorry, before I let you go.
Helping others.
Excellent. Rob, thank you so much for sharing that experience. Mary, Rob got a lot out of it, but feels like some people might just game the system with something like this.
Yeah, congratulations, Rob, and I appreciate you calling in and talking about your experience and having 10 out of 12 really get good experience from it is, you know, to me hopeful. But, you know, I understand that as well. It's a voluntary program at the Racine Correctional. In fact, they put it out there because we could only accommodate about 18 individual men at Racine Correctional. It's my understanding they had about 120 that signed up for it. So we'll be going back each semester to host a new set of men in circle. And the hope is that, just like with Rob, they get something out of it so that it can transform and change their lives for the better. And it sounds like that's what Rob is going to do. And I think the majority of people ultimately do that as well.
Thanks a lot for that call, Rob, at 800-642-1234. Jeremy joins us now in Mineral Point. Jeremy, hi.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. I just simply want to say thank you for having this conversation. I've come to learn that restorative justice and circles have Aboriginal Native American roots. So I'm wondering to what extent we can speak to maybe the influence the culture has on the processes and its intention, you know, that has been set forth for a very long time. And then in addition to that, I'm hearing a lot of callers, you know, call in and talk about people misusing and taking advantage of the process. But I just want to have folks understand that this is a process that's individualized and is special and unique to each person and each group that's involved. And it's important to be thinking about radical forgiveness, right, as a process for getting beyond and making sure people transform instead of staying stuck in punitive measures and harming people to teach a lesson.
Jeremy, so thanks so much for the call, Jeremy. Mary, we mentioned the indigenous roots of that at the outset of the show. Thanks for reminding me of that, Jeremy. But that idea of forgiveness versus a punitive approach, is that an accurate depiction of restorative justice, Mary?
Yeah, thanks for the call, and you hit the nail on the head. It can be about forgiveness, but it doesn't have to be about forgiveness. I think many of our survivors would say, "I am not going to forgive the person, but I want to have a dialogue with them about the questions about why it happened to me, why, you know, what can you do to help repair that harm? If it leads to forgiveness, that's good, but it doesn't always have to, and it doesn't always lead to forgiveness."
Thanks again for that call, Jeremy, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Mary Trajano with the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice at Marquette University. Mary, I want to talk about another venue now. We've been focusing on corrections so far. Schools are looking into restorative justice programs. What kind of things are you seeing out there?
Yeah, great question. In fact, you know, restorative justice can be done in many types of situations. It can be done in businesses, in schools. Wherever there's a harm or wherever there's a wrong or wrongdoing and you want to use a restorative justice process, there's many ways that can be done. But schools have adopted restorative practices for many, many years. And I know when I first began learning about restorative justice about 20 some years ago, the district attorney's office here in Milwaukee was working in Milwaukee Public Schools with others to facilitate restorative justice circles or community conferencing, which is a different form of restorative justice. And so, you know, if you ask the question, who was harmed, what is that harm and the ripple effect of that harm and how can we repair that harm and put it into a school system, it has some unique benefits, just like restorative justice has in the justice system. So grade schools, high schools, I know Marquette University is looking at, like other universities of higher education, using restorative practices in terms of discipline or wrongdoing on campus or disputes amongst individuals. You know, it is about having a civil dialogue, which is very difficult for us to have in these times, right? Actually sit in a circle or sit in a community conferencing and have a facilitated civil dialogue with each other that can lead to healing and not more harm doing.
I wanted to ask before we run out of time, Mary, just in our last minute, about training for people facilitating these circles. I've heard anecdotally from some schools, from staff and students that, you know, there's kind of an announcement. We're doing restorative practices, limited training. It went, not surprisingly, poorly. What goes into making somebody ready to be a facilitator?
That's a great question. And I'm still learning from the best, which is Justice Geske and others. I think to be a really true good facilitator of a restorative justice dialogue, you have to certainly stick to best practices, learn from the best, be critiqued, be willing to be critiqued so that you can increase your capacity to do so. Because the last thing we want to do is go in and re-harm somebody or individuals where the focus is to heal from harm that has happened. And so training, being critiqued on how you're doing it, giving it time to grow within you, I think is really, really important to becoming a good facilitator of restorative justice dialogues.
Mary, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Very well. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Mary Trigiano, adjunct professor of law, director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice at Marquette University. She's a former chief judge from the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. She told us some about work that the center has been doing on restorative justice, including at the Racine Correctional Institution. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, COVID was a major emergency for the public health field, and there are a lot of lessons still to be learned, according to the author of the new book, Within Reason, A Liberal Public Health for an Illiberal Time. The author joins the show.